Welcome to Conscious Compassion, hosted by Charles Gray
and Laura Darrell. This podcast will share stories of the different ways that people deal with low moments in their lives.
How they manifest the drive to overcome obstacles and keep pushing forward. A fluid space with media, poetry, music, literary readings, or just plain storytelling.
Coupled with in-depth interviews of the storytellers so that listeners can learn, relate, and be inspired.
Spend a moment with us as we explore creative coping strategies for these chaotic times. Conscious Compassion.
Where we share because we care.
Hello, and welcome to Conscious Compassion. I'm Charles Gray.
And I'm Laura Darrell.
And today we have the pleasure of speaking to Jenny Millay.
Hi.
Hey, Jenny.
Welcome. Oh,
this is really, really fun for me.
Thank you. No, thanks for having me. I'm super excited and super happy, you know, to be a part of this with you all.
Yay. So Jenny and I met because she was young Celie in the original company of Color Purple on Broadway.
Amazing.
So how old were you then, my dear?
I started off when I was 9. So I did it for a full year. I was part of the closing cast with you. Right. So yeah, 9 to 10.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And now she's a woman.
Yeah, you can say so.
I love it. She's a full grown woman. I met her as a true child. And just brilliant. Brilliant.
Very, very cool.
We brought you on today so you can tell us some stories and the evolution of a young woman in New York.
Exactly.
Which is kind of cool. And I'm just anxious to hear what you've got to say. If you can maybe just lay it out in terms of what came slightly before, just so we can see like what your life was like, and then slide us into the moment, and then we'll follow up and see how it goes from there.
Yeah. So I am now 23, going on 24. Actually, Mother's Day is my birthday, so yay!
How nice! Happy birthday!
Thank you. But yeah, previously, you know, I grew up performing. I still am performing, or, you know, a little less with the pandemic and everything. Right. And I just grew up doing it, dance, singing, acting, choreographing, you know, producing, directing. And then I went off to college. I went to the University of Cincinnati, College Conservatory of Music. I studied musical theater there with a minor in psychology as well. That was definitely, you know, a growing up period as well, especially being away from home, change of scenery, being not only at such a highly renowned conservatory like school, but in addition politically as well, and the climate there. I was there during the elections of 2016, so you know, there was a lot of things that I witnessed there. And it's just, you know, I felt like during those years there was a lot of growing up to do, in addition with the passing of my father. So college was definitely I had to put on my big girl panties on, you can say. And you know, now I'm back and the pandemic hit. And my family's international. My family's originally from Switzerland, and so am I. And at the peak of the pandemic last year, my mom moved back to Switzerland, and, you know, I moved out on my own as well. So, you know, a lot of life adjusting.
Right, wow. Right. Yeah.
Whew. So you're here now again, but for a while you did go back to Switzerland, yes?
I was in Switzerland for about 3 months. So literally when my mom moved, I moved into my new place with my roommates. And then 2 weeks later, I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'll just quarantine over there for however long. It originally was supposed to be for about a month or so, but then it ended up for, you know, being, I think I was there for almost like 3 months, close to 3 months. And then I kind of, you know, wanted to see what life was like and what it was possibly going to be like back in the States. I was there for about 3 months until, like, I want to say mid-July.
When did your father pass?
He passed away during my sophomore year of college, so October of 2016.
Okay, so that was all in that college experience.
Yeah, and just the way that it happened, you know, he wasn't sick beforehand. It just happened unexpectedly. That was kind of more of the tragic effect of things. And in addition, my grandparents, both of my mom's parents, passed away within, you know, all three of them passed away within 2 weeks, 10 days of each other. So the saying of they truly go in threes is, you know, I guess accurate in this sense. So, you know, there was a lot of not just on my end, but my mom's side of things too. A lot of life adjustments, you know, she packed up the house, and she, you know, moved down to Ohio with me. So we permanently lived in Ohio for about a year or so before we moved back to the East Coast after I graduated. So there was so many, our lives were truly flipped over, you know, with everything that happened.
Right, right. Well, it's amazing and wonderful that she was able to, well, that you were able to be there for each other, really.
Yeah. No, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, we had some rough patches for sure. I mean, that's every mom and daughter. And, you know, right. With me becoming a young adult and becoming more opinionated and vocal. But our relationship has definitely became stronger through that, you know, because we were the only things holding on to. I mean, I also have an older brother, but my entire family, like I mentioned before, is overseas. So we were truly the only things kind of holding on to each other at that tough period.
Right, your brother was in Switzerland?
Yeah, my entire family is in Europe, family in Switzerland and Spain. So, I mean, my aunt, my dad's sister, when, you know, everything was happened, she came over, you know, to support and of course be there for her brother, in spirit, and physically. But yeah, no, my entire family is over there. It's just me and my mom and now just myself.
Did it feel like everything happened kind of simultaneously? Because was that like right after the election and moving to college? I'm just curious, like, what was your mental state when as you were going through it?
It was happening all at once. My dad and my grandparents passed away, all of them in October. The elections were in November.
Wow.
And yeah, that, and then and I wanted to take some time off from school just to be there for my mom, whether it be a semester or a full year off. But, you know, she was like, you know, think about your dad. Your dad wouldn't have wanted that for you. Right. But yeah, it was everything happening at once. Winter break happened in December. We packed up the house. My mom and I moved during winter break to Ohio. And then we were there for a year. And then, you know, I finished out my course of studies. And then, you know, sooner or later, senior year approached. And then, you know, it was time for me to showcase and go back to New York. So, yeah, there was a lot of milestones, in a sense, that happened within my course of, you know, college years.
So when this incident that happened to you, where did it fall in line with all of this? I'm assuming it's after.
Yeah, it happened about, and the incident that Charles is talking about is I was sexually assaulted second semester of junior year. I don't wish it upon anyone. It was definitely a learning experience for myself and hopefully, you know, the people involved. It was just, you know, I was just kind of getting back on my feet a little bit post the passing of my dad, because this incident happened about a year later, but I sort of hit rock bottom But at the same time, you know, I'm a workaholic in a sense. You know, I try to trudge through everything. So, you know, I was just focusing on school and getting out of there and, you know, just making the best out of, you know, my college experience, you know, before I make it into the real world. So wow. Yeah, just timeline wise, it was not very, convenient, you can say.
Well, that... I don't know that there was ever a good time for that.
No, true. But in this circumstances, you know, with, you know, everyone passing wasn't easy. And, you know, my mom was trying to hold it together for me and I was trying to hold it together for her. And to be honest with, you know, the incident, I didn't tell my mom until, you know, 2 years later before I had to show up to court. But we can get into that. But, you know, I was battling that sexual assault on my own. I mean, I had a small support system. I, of course, you know, my legal team, and, you know, those who were kind of there for it, at the moment, but, or that night, I should say. But other than that, I was truly just battling it on my own and, you know, trying to make sure this was all set in stone before I graduated. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. And that's where I had to tell my mom that we had to go back to Cincinnati to go to court.
Can you just break it down chronologically so we know what happened and what we're leading up to?
Yeah. So it, chronologically, in the sense of the events
yes.
of that night. Yeah. So I want to say I was talking to someone. I was on, you know, I'm on the dating apps. Dating for me is kind of hard. You know, being in the arts and
I
also,
feel you, sister.
Exactly. You know, being in the arts and, you know, just always so busy. So, you know, I resort to the apps in a sense. And so I was speaking to someone for, I want to say about a month. And we always tried to meet up, but it just never worked out. But there was one night that he was visiting his best friend. And his best friend was actually not too far from college campus. And he apparently also went to the same school that I went to, but just obviously different departments and not affiliated with music. So I was like, you know what? Let me see. I don't know. This is sort of last minute. Plus, I don't want to come by myself. And he was like, oh, yeah, you're more than welcome to bring a friend. You know, that sort of situation. So I was like, okay, we'll see what I can do. I messaged one of my friends and she was like, you know, like, let's go, let's check it out. Of course, I'll be there with you. And so we decided to go and my date and his best friend were there.
And it was a bar or a club or?
No, it was at his best friend's place.
Okay.
And so we kind of mingle, you know, kind of get to know one another. And it was all good vibes. And usually I have like I'm very aware of my surroundings, you know, especially with someone that I've never met before. I'm very just hyper aware. And
you grew up in New York, right?
Or yes.
Primarily.
That's what I was about to say. She's a New Yorker.
Yeah. Exactly. I just don't let things fly.
There you go.
But yeah, I was like, you know, of course I try to keep my cool and get to know and like have a good time, but you know, I was still very, you know, aware of my surroundings and, I just, you know, I wasn't drinking necessarily, but then, I thought I got a good read on the both of them. They just seemed very casual, very, you know, just go with the flow. But later to, I know, I guess it was all an act. But so my friend, unfortunately, she had tech rehearsal the next day, for a show that she was in. She was a drama major at my school. And, because I felt comfortable with them, I was like, you know what? You know, they're going out, we're going into, you know, in public, we're going to a bar, you know, I think I'll be okay. But of course I'll keep you in the loop if anything happens. So we go out, just the three of us. And then me and my date, we hit the dance floor. We're having a good time. His best friend goes off doing his own thing. He runs into some of his friends at the bar that we were at, and then the bar closes. FYI, if you go to Cincinnati, the bar closes very, very early.
I was going to say 10 o'clock.
Not that late, but, you know, in New York, we're open until, like, you know, into the wee hours of the morning, right, like, you know, 5 a.m. or something.
Right,
there,
but
it closes.
Not there.
Yeah, they close around, like, you know, 2 o'clock, just when the party's getting started, at least for me, because I'm a New Yorker.
I'm a grandma, so I'm, like, rolling out of there at midnight. I'm like, peace.
Right, right.
Well, that's me right now. I think, like, you know, with the pandemic, it hasn't helped me at all. So, but yeah, the club is closing. We all kind of reconvene in the front, trying to figure out what the next game plan is. And his best friend, my date's best friend, was like, you know what? I'm going to stay out a little longer, you know. My date doesn't live close by. So I think the plan was that he was going to crash at his best friend's place anyway. So his best friend gave the keys to his apartment so that we could go back. So we go back. We fool around a bit. It was all good vibes. And then his best friend shows up about like an hour or so later. And the best friend is like, you know, it's really like, you know, he was being like super nice and everything. He's like, you know, it's super late for you guys. Why don't you guys sleep in the bedroom, in my bedroom, and I'll sleep on the couch tonight. I was like, okay. And then we go to bed, but at the same time, again, I'm very aware of my surroundings. Like, even if I spend the night at someone's place, like, I don't sleep. But somehow this all, with the course of events, it all happened within like 5 minutes or 10 minutes of each other. So somehow I pass out. I feel my date getting up a few times. One, to go to the bathroom because I hear the toilet flush. The second time he was out a little longer than I anticipated. And then somehow, I guess he got up a third time, but I didn't feel him getting up. He was gone for a period of time, but then again, you know, I was sort of in and out of a state of sleep. Then apparently the next thing I know is someone is behind me, laying down behind me, and I'm assuming it's my date. And he starts to fool around a bit. And, but then again, like I said, I'm in and out of a sleep. And then all of a sudden I hear, the condom wrapper opening up. I turn around so I could see that, you know, my date is putting on the condom on correctly, because we used protection beforehand. And then I see that it's his best friend, my date's best friend. He was trying it with me. And I, like, scurry away. I'm like, pardon my French, I'm like, what the fuck? Where is blank, my date? And he's like, oh, I don't know. I think he went to get food or something. And I just like was shocked. So I scurry out, grab my clothes, run out the door, call an Uber, head to my apartment, shower. And then all of a sudden, as soon as I get out the shower, I see like a bunch of missed calls and messages from my date. He's like, where are you? Like, what happened? Are you okay? Blah, blah, blah. Kingston just told me that, you know, you just ran out the door. And I was like, don't ever talk to me again. You set me up. Like, just like, forget it. We're never coming in contact again. He was like, no. I want to know what happened. You know, he was trying to resolve the situation. And then this is where the red flag came up, though. He said, did Kingston do anything that offended you? And I was like, okay, so...
So you knew, he said.
You knew. You were in on it. So I was like, fuck you. Goodbye. And yeah, that's pretty much the end of it. The next day, I kind of... Luckily, it was a weekend, so I had the weekend to myself, in a sense. I tried to figure out what my game plan was. I, you know, didn't know what to do. And that's when I was seeing, at first, a grief counselor, but then he ended up being my therapist. He was originally my mom's therapist after the passing of, you know, my dad. But then, you know, we kind of bonded and, you know, latched onto one another. And I ended up seeing him. And after the incident, I scheduled an emergency appointment with my therapist. And from then on, my therapist walked me through the steps of, you know, reporting the incident, calling the cops. And it was a long process. Like I said earlier, it took about 2 years to get a court date.
Good Lord.
Mm-hmm. I think it was because the judge that I had was in and out, I think due to medical problems and stuff like that. So, and I was really hoping to get, and I think at first, if I'm remembering everything correctly, I want to go to trial, but that's a longer process, of course. So in the end, I ended up doing a plea bargain, which is a quicker route. So I should have done that probably from the beginning, but I really was, I think just the anger in me was like, no, I want to go to court. I want to have a jury. I want to have this and that. In the long run of things, the plea bargain did end up working in my favor as well. And I got everything that I asked for, which was, you know, what I was really happy for. So yeah, that's kind of the timeline of that night and the whole incident.
Wow.
So therapy was very helpful. What else? I mean, after experiencing all that, what kind of help keep your heart beating in a normal rhythm and not giving up or losing hope or feeling just demolished by anger?
For sure, therapy. My therapist, rest in peace. He unfortunately passed away in May. I just found that out recently. He was incredible. I mean, like I said, he was the one that helped me walk through step by step everything. And, you know, he would have, if I would have gone to trial, he would have, testified for me and everything. But also I did have a small circle, that I did share to, my trusted friends and a person that unfortunately their daughters went through far, far worse than I did, but, you know, who knows what it's like and has been through the whole thing. And I wanted to tell my mother, but it was just more of I wanted to protect her because I didn't want this to be the cherry on top with everything that, you know, she was healing and going through. So I just, you know, I kind of tucked that away from her until it was, you know, appropriate for me to do so. But yeah, my therapist, my small circle of people that I shared this too. And honestly, my legal team, I had an incredible detective and an incredible prosecutor who, you know, were just with me with every step of the way. So, those were my tight-knit circles. And then of course I was in school, so that kind of helped distract things from me and just kind of focus on my goals and, you know, what I want to do in life and all that stuff. Yeah.
Encouraging. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, Charles, you go.
I was just going to say it's encouraging to hear a story where the legal system worked. That's all I was going to say.
Yeah, I know. And especially during these times. But
yes,
I mean, I was upset and pissed that it took 2 years to get to the finished result. But
I feel like I've never heard of a court case or like legal proceedings working in a very timely fashion. I remember my friend went through a 10-year divorce. It took 10 years because her husband was a lawyer and knew how to kind of game the system. But you know, I feel like I always hear about these things. It's whether it's like backlog in the court system, or like you said, a judge, like maybe there aren't as many judges or as there needs to be, or what's going on with the judicial branch. But it seems like nothing ever happens as speedy as people want it to, which is interesting.
There was a lot of flip-flopping. I think I also forgot that I think at some point I had to switch prosecutors as well for some weird reason. So I don't know why, but
starting from scratch.
Right. But the prosecutor that I ended up having was just fabulous. So, you know, even when I moved back to New York after graduation, like, he still kept me in the loop of everything on what's going on and, like, what steps I should probably take or, you know, I should take and, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, everyone on my team was incredible.
What about art and, you know, what you do? How has that affected your ability to process everything, and how has what's happened to you affected your art?
Oh, that's a good question. I think initially I just threw myself into art, whether it be about, you know, sexual assault, or rape or anything of that sort. I think at first I just wanted to kind of coast by in life, you know, because like I said, I was still going through, you know, the traumatic events of my dad and now this. I think I just kind of threw myself head on first with like work. But then now I think I don't want to say that I like wear this as a badge of honor. That is so weird to say, but I wanted to use this time or that time to, you know, make something into light. So recently, you kind of like as a, you know, as a coming out story in a sense, I did a photo shoot with a good friend of mine who's a fabulous photographer, and I approached him and I was like, you know, hey, I've been debating about doing this shoot for a while now, but I also feel the need to start a conversation about this because I think not many people want to discuss this or such, you know, such a deep topic. But I want to do like a, you know, a breakout story with images, with me embracing my body. Cause also at that time I was, you know, not confident anymore in myself, in my self-worth. And, I was very insecure and very, very closed off with myself and in touch with myself. I wasn't in touch with myself anymore. So I wanted to tap into that. And the next thing you know, he loved the idea. We had like a storyboard and everything. We're back and forth and we get to the shoot and I did like a partially nude shoot of just me embracing myself, my body, and, you know, exposing, you know, those scars and wounds. And the result of it was incredible. I mean, I knew people have dealt with situations like these, but the amount of positive feedback has been truly incredible. You know, I didn't realize how many people in my inner circle have gone through something like this. So,
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
The images are very, very powerful. I have seen them. And if you would be so kind, there will be a section on our website, on the Conscious Compassion website, where people will be able to find out a little bit more about you. So hopefully
there's an image you would care to share. We'd be honored to include it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I did kind of like a yin and yang concept. So like the first part is of me, you know, kind of in this somber, you know, you kind of get to see my thought processes of what I was going through at that time mentally, like, you know, kind of hitting that rock bottom depression state. So you can really see that. And then it's all in black and white photos. Right. And then the second half is, you know, it's very me embracing my body. I have like a shawl and I'm waving that around and just, you know, kind of releasing, and it's in color. So yeah, it's I can definitely share that with you all. You definitely have permission.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. I think it's going to be very powerful for people because it is. I found the pictures very, very moving. I didn't know any backstory or anything that was happening. I just happened to flick by on Facebook and saw them and went, what the heck is going on?
It's amazing how photography can be so evocative. And, you know, you see an image, a still image that says so much, almost more than a moving image, in some way, because it's staticness almost lends itself to like, well, what was, you wonder, what was that moment before? What is in that kind of, that mysterious raising of her eyebrow? You know, what am I seeing there that invites the viewer in?
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of pain motivated that type of image? You know, even if you haven't met it personally, you recognize it.
So,
you know,
you would say that, like, for a while, the performing arts work was kind of an escape route, and then you found a way through this photography shoot to bring to light and tackle it head on, as opposed to escaping into another story. You made it the story. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, pretty much. And I think also at some point throughout the course of my healing process, before I went to court, I was just like, you know, whatever it will be. Like, I kind of just came to terms with what happened. And I think that just kind of helped me relieve some of that, you know, weight on my shoulders. But yeah, you can definitely say my school and doing, you know, something active all the time was kind of distracting me for a little bit. And I think, in a sense, I mean, looking back now, I think I definitely pushed it under the rug, but at the time I didn't think I was doing that.
Sometimes I think we label escape as a bad thing. Like, sometimes, like, distraction is exactly what you need in terms, like, you're not, oftentimes we're not ready to tackle something or wrap our minds around it, and we need to distract until we're ready to face it in a way that feels productive and constructive and cathartic. And so I think everything, there's a time and place for different types of art form, which is very relatable.
Yeah.
I think it allows you to heal. I think sometimes you have to step away from something long enough to be able to digest it and allow the body. I mean, it's just like going to sleep. You work out and you break the body down a little bit, and then you go to sleep and the body has a chance to kind of recoup. And I think the escape can be very similar to that. I want to piggyback on Laura's question. And how has this affected two things? How has it affected your work and how you approach things? Because, I mean, there's a level of maturity that you have achieved as a result of this experience. There we go. Mm-hmm. Finally speaking English.
It's so hard. I feel sometimes, like, I'm a good conversationalist, and then we got this idea to do a podcast, and suddenly I was like, I don't know how to speak.
Reaching,
I really hope
I
our guests
idea,
know how to speak.
But the words won't come.
Also, like, English itself is a hard language. Like, you know, I speak another language, but also speaking to my friends who, you know, speak other languages, they're like, dang, English is hard. So
that sort of makes me feel better, although it's my only language, really. Although
I do know
some Spanish. So, but I mean, still, I'm like, I have no excuse. I should be good at this. But yeah, has it affected the kinds of stories you want to tell or the way you approach art now?
Definitely. You know, a lot of, like, for instance, like, going back to school, I always go back to it just because, you know, this happened during my the course of my studies. But a lot of the work that I had to do was fairly dark, in a sense. You can speak, like, a lot of, you know, dramatic work. Mm-hmm. And also that year we were actually able to write a lot of our own works. So that was also freeing, in a sense, that I was able to tap into that, you know, that night, or, you know, or whatever other dramatic scene or story that I was sharing at that time. I was able to use that moment and, you know, catapult me or launch me into that scene work, or, you know, whatever I was doing. So it was also kind of a therapeutic freeing experience, but, you know, unfortunately I had to bring myself back into that moment. But hey, you know, that's what performing artists do. We have to tap into those, you know, things that we don't necessarily want to, you know, relive or re-experience again.
But using it can be very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful. I did a show in Connecticut right after my mother passed, and I had to play like 8 different characters. But one of them was a civil rights preacher, and had a very powerful song that went along with it, and it was very much about the storm and Drang, and you know the effect of just being militant and all the things that you're fighting against.
Mm-hmm.
I can comfortably say that it was the thing that people walked away talking about, and it was for me this cathartic moment every night, because every single time I sang that song, I ended up in a puddle of tears and mess, and it was just, but I was processing loss. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't have to fake the words I was saying. I was living them. So people got to watch that, and it was there.
Yeah. No,
so
yeah.
Sometimes you just have to, you know, let that be it. And I needed that show as much as I think it needed me in that part. So
Yeah, for sure. I think every show, I mean, I always say like every show that I do or every production, there's always a lesson to be learned from it. And a lot of the work that I did at that time, I learned a lot about myself and also just, you know, about the experience and, you know, moving forward from it.
Excellent. Do you think there are shows that you've done in your past that now with these experiences, these hard times that you've gone through, you think back and like, and revisit in a different way, like a story that now takes on new resonance for you?
Yeah, for sure. Actually, funny enough, I did a senior year, my last show, I did Hunchback of Notre Dame, and that was Esmeralda. And I think Esmeralda is a lot like me, and just because of everything that I went through throughout, you know, the course of my college experience, she resonated a lot with me, and I think she resonated with me than even other characters that I've played after I graduated. And, you know, especially since we're talking about sexual assault and me tapping into that, there's a moment that she is sexually assaulted. And, you know, sometimes that, you know, playing that part every night, or that scene, I should say, was a little bit traumatic. But, you know, as Charles said, you know, it allowed me to heal. And I just, you know, I brought myself to it, and I brought, you know, now this mature Jenny, in a sense, into this, you know, the scene or into this role. So I definitely dive into work a little bit more. How do you say? We're going back to English. English is hard. Yeah, it's just, I definitely tap into my work a little bit more mindful. Not that I'm, you know, that there's like a hesitancy or that I'm cautious, but just that when I see something that I resonate with, I'm like, okay, there we go. I can go into that moment, you know, easily, or this is something that I want to share and, you know, make people aware about, and you know that this needs to be discussed, that there needs to be a dialogue. So I always kind of like have more of a methodical approach to things now with, you know, mm-hmm. with the things that I went through.
So how has this, and if I'm being too personal, tell me, mm-hmm. and I'll back right up. How has this affected your ability to date?
It's definitely changed. I after the incident, I mean, I took myself off of the apps immediately, and right. You know, even the cop that I reported to, he's coming from, I think, a father perspective, because he told me that he has kids as well, and he's like, get yourself off of those apps. I was like, yes, sir, I know. but you know, it's hard being a performer,
yes, it really
you know,
is.
And It's shown me different things. I am definitely more cautious when it comes to dating now. I mean, I actually at some point went back on the apps just because, you know, my circle is very small. I don't have a lot of sources or friends who can, like, you know, be like, you know, I wish I had, you know, blind dates and stuff like that, in a sense, you know, where people can, like, set me up or whatnot, right. But it's kind of limited. But it's definitely, I'm more cautious, but at the same time, I'm not trying to let it hinder me from, right. You know, experiencing love, or, you know, and experiencing, you know, the dating lifestyle. But it's definitely kind of, you know, I had to skirt a little bit.
Well, COVID has been the biggest dry patch for the world. Let's be real.
That's very true.
You know,
yeah, COVID has not helped.
Coming up when I did pre-internet. Thank you very much. you have to understand that bar life was your social life.
Yeah.
You met people and you immediately met their friends and their friends and their friends. And that's how you created this social network. Mm-hmm. And the reason bars have the kind of history that they did was because they were social hubs.
Right.
That's how people communicated and met and did everything.
Right.
So you didn't need LinkedIn and all these other things, because all of that, plus the good stuff, all managed to happen at the bar.
Yeah.
But, you know, the internet pretty much killed that, because mm-hmm. then everything went underground mm-hmm. and it was all online. And if people went to a bar, they'd sit in a bar on their phone trying to hook up. And it's like, well, that's kind of stupid. You're sitting next yeah. to somebody, talk to them.
Yeah.
But now you've got a pandemic where you can't even congregate in a group anyplace. So now what are you supposed to do?
Right.
Anybody who's single is truly single, because you know, outside of your immediate circle of friends, which more than likely you're not diddling with, there's nobody to turn to.
Right.
Yeah. So I get it. I certainly understand, because it becomes very, very difficult to
yeah.
find outlets and to find anybody that you can have any sense of trust with. I mean, even now that we're in this new situation of people getting vaccinated mm-hmm. and somebody who I have the greatest respect for, who is so super politically enlightened and always, you know, championing a cause online and everything. He's always out there. And he posted on Facebook that he had just gotten his second vaccination shot. And mm-hmm. it's like, so 2 weeks from today, anybody want to make out? And I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you? All it means is that you won't die. It doesn't mean you won't get it. And it
right.
doesn't mean you're not going to give it to somebody else.
Right.
So, you know, I know it's been locked down for a long time, and I know it's hard. Trust, I know it's hard. But work it out another way.
Oh, people, right. But people are still online dating. I mean, it hasn't stopped. And
people are still hooking up left and right. It's amazing.
Well, I mean, and there are some people who are... And sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, please. No.
But there are also, like, some people who are doing it smartly. Like, they do, like, FaceTime dates
right.
or, like, virtual dates. So, like, I would totally be fine with that.
Or they meet right. in public, yeah. but, you know, they stay, you know, far enough away from each other. And that, you know, they try to be respectful of obviously, spatial issues. And they don't
social.
Make out with each other.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's hard to, I think this pandemic obviously has challenged a lot of people, because how do you put a stop on life, and especially for a lot of, like, women, let's say, who are in their mid to late 30s, I imagine, with, like, biological clock ticking, like, this is not, and if they're single, like,
helping.
This is, I mean, it's not good. It's not,
yeah.
they have a limited amount of time, and this is precious time that's being
right.
taken
yeah.
from them. So, I
right.
mean, I feel really bad for women in that position, because, you know, the time crunch is real.
Right.
I was online dating, and then I put on my online dating profile, because I just got so tired of these guys, like, wanting to just hook up. I put no hookups, mm-hmm. and it dried out a lot. Guys stopped liking me at the rate that they were before I put that. Mm-hmm. I think I even said, like, I want a friend that evolves into more, no hookups. And then it was like crickets for a little while. And I thought, this is sad.
It is sad, but it's good because, you know, better to clear the field so that you can actually focus on the good one. Because while you're messing around with all the other stuff, you'll never even find, you won't even see it. You know what I mean?
Right.
The perfect thing could be standing right in front of you, but you wouldn't see it because there'd be so much mess between you and it. This way you clear the field and you can like see that diamond at the end and go, okay, it might take a minute to get there, but I'm coming.
Right. Well, and Jenny, I don't know if you feel this way, but I mean, I feel like a lot of women have a hard time articulating what they want out of fear of coming across like neurotic or crazy. Like they don't want to be that girl that lays down too many boundaries because then they won't seem like the fun, like kind of relaxed type. And but then they open themselves up to like, I don't know, I guess the point being like putting down our boundaries actually saves us time rather than hurts our time. I'm not articulating that.
I feel you 100% because I am sort of, or I've been like going through something similar. Like I was seeing someone for a little bit and I take some of the blame as well for, you know, not being articulate beforehand or just continuing on to seeing this person, even though I always try, like I said earlier, I always try to see the light or like the positives or the good things in people. And I'm like, oh, maybe if we continue hanging out, you know, they'll see like something more in me and et cetera. But here we are, fast forward to 9 months later or 6 months later, you know, we're still in the same spot and they don't want anything more. And I'm here wanting something more. And I do already, not just even before the incident, I had trust issues beforehand, and with that night, it kind of escalated things a little more for me. But like going back to the whole like dating and relationships stuff, like I've never been in a relationship, and you know, I'm 23, and I see you know my circle of friends or whatever get, you know, settling down, getting married, getting engaged or whatever it is. And, you know, I don't necessarily want those things right now because I'm young and I want to travel, see the world, do my thing, you know, be successful in whatever I do. However, I still would like someone to share that with and, have that loving, you know, sidekick of mine, or, you know, we're, you know, the dynamic duo and, you know, everything has a place and time and I, you know, hopefully that'll be around the corner for me at some point, but you know, I hope it happens at some point.
I trust it will.
Oh, it will.
I trust it will. And it'll be the right one. Cause the hardest part is waiting. But the reality is it's when you least expect it, when you're not looking
expecting
for it,
it
comes.
Yeah.
But then, Charles, you know, they'll say, like, if you're not putting yourself out there and trying, like, what are you just expecting the phone to ring? Like, sort of
LinkedIn
job.
Mentality. I'm sorry. It's not a job. Relationships are not a job. I will say, if you're just sitting on your sofa eating a bag of potato chips, it's not going to come find you. Mm-hmm. I would be the one to tell you to go to church, go bowling, go to some social thing other than a bar where you will meet people that you don't know.
Right.
Because that's the safe, generic environment where you're going to meet a person, not meet a sex partner and then figure out who the person is, where you're actually going to meet the person first and then work it from there.
Right.
Because life partners are people that it's a completely different vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I sound like, you know, Methuselah over here, but you know, I'm almost 30 years in, so I think I've got a little bit of cred when it comes to this.
Yeah.
You know, all the things that attract you to someone initially become really irrelevant after about year 10 or 12.
Right.
It's just, that's not it. What keeps you with them is the other stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you can generate and focus on those things, those qualities first,
right,
you are far more likely to go the distance.
Well, you're looking for a friend, you know, like
correct.
They have to be a friend. If they're not a friend
first
yes.
Mm-hmm. Then good luck navigating through the trials and tribulations of life, because the sad thing is that everything we've experienced thus far, life isn't just going to like be like, oh, you were a little top heavy, so I'm just going to be easy from now on in terms of like the trauma and the hard time. Like hard times are kind of a part of life. And so learning, I think that's why we started this podcast, is what gets us through those hard times, because you can have the best mentality and the best attitude. That doesn't mean you're going to be spared a health issue or losing a friend or something like that. And so what gets you through? And it sounds like for you, therapy, friends, and art are the heavy hitters. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, you can pretty much say that. Those have been like my useful tools. But like, you know, with current dating situations, obviously, you know, COVID and everything. But like, I totally feel what Laura was saying. You know, it's hard, especially when you like change your physically on the apps, like change your intentions, even though internally you know it, but like putting it, displaying it out there, like no hookups, just want, you know, a friend to evolve something into more. It's like, you know, it's like weeding it out. And, you know, I had those dry spells as well. And I just feel like, I think with the climate that we're in nowadays, I think everyone just wants to have fun. And I completely understand. But I was actually having a conversation about this with my brother recently. You know, saying, you know, this is the perfect time to get to know someone. You know, what else have we, I mean, when we were in lockdown, you know, what else have we got going on? You know, this is the perfect time to kind of buckle down and, you know, see their likes and dislikes and truly get to know that individual. But it hasn't happened for me.
Me neither. Well, you know,
it's like the old days. I mean, when people would court and write letters, you know, for months, if not years, you know, prior to even meeting in some cases. So, I mean, the idea of having an internet pen pal and actually really getting to communicate with them and learn about them prior to meeting is an opportunity.
I feel like we've made progress in so many ways, but the one area where I'm kind of like, I don't know that we've made progress is this idea of instant gratification, this idea of like, I want what I want, and kind of hearkening back to our interview with Michael, like our expectations that we deserve it now.
And the specificity of it at this point, because people give out a menu with detailed, you know, and if you don't fall into all of these
categories,
then you're not it. And mind you, it generally, the more detailed and specific stuff is coming from the least interesting people. And I'm like, really? What? Who died and told you that you were the almighty that had the ability to decree who was worthy of you? No, sorry.
It's true.
Long story short, dating is hard. It is hard.
Like English. English is hard. Dating is hard.
English is hard. Dating is hard. So if you had to think about it in terms of what you've been through and what you've learned from your experiences, what would be the positive takeaway?
I think the positive, I mean, there was many positives, but I think the positive is for me that how I realized how strong I was. I always knew that I was self-sufficient and independent in a lot of ways, but and I do have a tendency where I don't ask for help when I need it. And I should have asked for help or, you know, assistance, you know, especially like, you know, talking to my mom. But I was, you know, just like I said, trying to look out for her personal well-being. But taking on all of this for, you know, 2 years, it made me show how like strong I was, and that, you know, I am capable of doing a lot of things on my own. I don't wish this upon anyone, and I don't want to go through anything like this again, but, you know, that I am worthy, that I am strong and capable of so many things. And Phoenix rising from the ashes, let's just put it that way.
Very powerful.
I can work with that.
Yeah, I think it just made me realize the maturity level that I have, and the resiliency that I have as well.
You're good. A survivor.
Yeah.
And a thriver.
And a thriver. Survivor and thriver.
There you go. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and you're mm-hmm. still kicking, so that's good. Mm-hmm. I can't thank you enough, sweetheart.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, especially, you know, very personal stories. It's not easy, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you for letting me share this with you all. And I hope, you know, it resonates with someone out there.
I'm sure it will.
And, you know, whether it be sexual assault or, you know, I spoke a lot about the passing of my dad and stuff, you know, I just hope, knowing that you're not alone out there, you know, that there that you always have a support system to fall back on. And yeah, so just thank you for letting me share this with you all, and you all listening to what I had to say.
God bless.
God bless.
Thank you. Same to you all.
Take care, sweetheart.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Conscious Compassion. We'd love to hear your input and to hear what you do to make it through.
You can reach us on our website at consciouscompassion.net. We've got some amazing interviews coming up that we can't wait for you to hear.
Until then, catch you next time. I'm Charles Gray.
And I'm Laura Darrell.
Conscious Compassion. We're sharing
is caring.